Welcome to the second season of Science in a Cup. I'm Alex Papanikolaou from the Hawkesbury Institute for the Environment of Western Sydney University. Today we have the first episode where I will be explaining a word of a phrase that has a special meaning to me, and that is the word science. So science can be different things to different people. For example, if you're looking at a movie, you can have a scientist that is saving the world and is making a new innovation, prevent an asteroid from crashing into Earth. Or science could be mad and dangerous. It could be a virus that's going to destroy mankind. Both of these things are not actually science. They're actually engineering. They're technology. You have people that make things, and these things could be good or bad. So for me, science is not that. Science for me is a process, is a way of life, is a way of thinking, where the person is driven by a need to discover, a desire to discover, and form a hypothesis of how the world works. And this hypothesis is then tested using experiments. And the results of these experiments are then debated to create temporary views of how the world works. A view entirely and solely based on facts. Facts that we think are true at the time. So let's take it one step at a time. So an example of how science can work is gravity. We all are being affected by gravity right now. The entire universe is affected by gravity. The universe is constantly affected by gravity, whether we observe it or not. The universe had gravity before we existed, and is going to have gravity after we die. But what is our understanding of gravity? How does gravity work? We can, maybe, find out one day. But can we really be certain that this is how gravity works? If you remember from school, you've probably been taught about how Newton was sitting underneath a tree and an apple fell on his head, and then he came, aha, there is a mass, and the mass causes things to fall down, and they gravitate towards an object with even bigger mass. In this case, the small mass was the apple, and the bigger mass was the Earth. This applies to celestial bodies too, for example, the Moon. The Moon is a small object compared to the Earth, so it's actually attracted towards the Earth, but the Moon also has its own momentum going perpendicular to the Earth. So even though the Moon is falling downwards into the Earth, at the same time it's moving sideways. And it does that forever and forever and forever. It will never reach the Earth in our lifetime. That model of gravity has already been almost made obsolete. Einstein showed, as part of his theory on relativity, that there are gravitational waves, / particles, that travel at the speed of light and distort space-time, something incompatible with Newton's theory. And we didn't know that it was the case because we could never prove it until a few months ago when gravitational waves were discovered by an experiment, a very clever experiment, which measured the time it takes for two black holes to collide and be detected by a huge antenna with its left and right parts detecting the signal of the two black holes colliding at a different time point. So in terms of understanding science, the word science, what does this example mean? Knowledge is, for a scientist, momentary. It is based on the facts we have at this moment of time. The other idea is that these facts, and only these facts, determine our understanding of how the universe works. Let me give you another example. Let's imagine you have two paintings. One painting is by an artist. The other painting is by a scientist. Now, both paintings will be good. Both paintings will be honest, because the artist and the scientist will paint what they want. The difference between the artist and the scientist is that the artist will paint with his heart, will paint what he thinks in his mind is beautiful. The scientist can only paint what she sees and what she can experience. She will be driven by her reasons, and she will be driven by her thoughts. She will never paint her hopes. She will never paint her fears. And she can only paint what she knows, what she sees. Whereas the artist will use his paintbrushes and will use his emotions to paint the truth. what he thinks is true. And if you compare those paintings side by side, even if they're looking at the same thing, the artist will be more human. He will be giving you knowledge that is not black and white. He will be giving you an image that actually means something in a much deeper level and can actually stir new thoughts and new emotions. It can be creative. The scientist painting may be perceived a bit more dry, might be perceived more black and white, if you will it. Maybe it will also be more difficult to communicate, maybe even with a lot of strange words and arcane phrases. The difference is that the mission of the scientist is not to entertain, but inform. For example, if you ask them to paint the blueprint of how to, for example, make a bridge, the artist's painting will never give you a bridge that will stay. Whereas a scientist could actually make you a bridge that will be pretty stable and pretty robust. Why? Because they have considered how the world works, what force will be exerted on the bridge, what material will be built from, etc. Now that we have created a painting from a scientist and a painting from an artist, what about those engineers and those technologists? Well, you see, for me, the word engineering or the word technology, they're based on science. They're based on those fundamental understandings of how the world works. But their job is a little bit different. Their job is not to describe the world. Their job is not to create the painting. Their job is to create the object using the painting. So if the painting was a diagram or a blueprint of a bridge, the job of an engineer or a technologist would be to go and actually build that bridge. Of course, one should not underestimate the value those technologists and engineers are bringing into the world of knowledge, because actually their work, their experiments will inform what is wrong in science and what the scientist should fix. So if the scientist has made a beautiful painting of a beautiful bridge, and by beauty I mean here something that works perfectly well the way it's supposed to, and then after 50 years the tides have eroded its foundations, and the engineer will have to tell the scientist, and the scientist will say, oh, I didn't think about that. You see, scientists are also humans. And that's a different angle that we need to bring in here, because we are all humans. And even if we are using our brains and our knowledge and our understanding of the world to try to paint a better picture, we will make mistakes. And that's why the most beautiful thing in science, especially today, but even from a long, long, long time ago, when the first philosophers or natural philosophers walked the earth and started speaking and arguing, was this community of debate, of respectful debate. You'll have a group of people today using the internet, in the past using the marketplace, and they will be discussing what they think. The cornerstone of a good scientist who does a proper debate is that they're flexible in what they can say and what their opinions are. It makes no sense in progressing science if you have two people saying different, giving different interpretations of the world and being unwilling to budge. Be very careful here. This is not a journalistic exercise where you can assume that the truth lies in the middle somewhere. No, it is entirely possible one of them is completely wrong and the other one is completely right. And it's entirely possible they're all completely wrong. But by having a respectful debate where you're willing to take each other's opinions on board, it allows your brain to work and see the deficits in your thinking. And this is something that natural philosophers from ancient Greece and beyond have taught us for many, many, many centuries. But since then, we have brought in a new tool, perhaps the most powerful one yet. Our debate has evolved to be more structured and reproducible, so that it's based on something special. It's called the experiment. So this system of experimenting was actually best described in history by a guy called Francis Bacon. This is Francis Bacon, the philosopher and chancellor, not the Francis Bacon, the artist. And he wrote a book called Novum Organum, or The New Instrument, The New Method. And the idea in this book was that he described the entire process of how we can actually create knowledge. He said, you have an understanding of the way the world works. You have a theory. And that theory allows you to make predictions. The important thing is those predictions can be tested. For example, if you make a theory that there's a teacup going around the planet, say Saturn, as Bernard Russell said, it's not really good science because you can never disprove there is no teacup orbiting Saturn. Now, you can choose to believe that there is a teacup. But science would never be able to test these beliefs. That is not the function of science. Compare this to this statement. All swans are white. That's a theory. I've been living in Europe most of my life, and I can confidently say that I think all swans are white. So I'm going to go out in the field. That's the second part of my process, and it's called the experiment, where I'm actually going to test that by looking for all the swans I can see and find out if they're white. And let's just say I did that all over Europe and all over the United States and all over Asia, and I found that indeed all swans were white. Now I have managed to induce that indeed all swans are white. This body of knowledge will be propagated, will be written down, will be spoken, and will be forming parts of textbooks for generations to come. Until Captain Cook discovered black swans in Australia. And that's the important thing. Once Captain Cook discovered the black swans, you cannot just say, well, look, Mr. Captain, you're wrong. What you're seeing is not true. Because I have a book here that says all swans are white. What a good scientist will do in a conference or a debate or in the scientific literature will accept the evidence that Captain Cook presents and she'll sit down and think either Captain Cook does not see swans or my definition of swans is limited to Europe and America. And that's pretty much what happened. And now we have black swans. So now the definition of a swan no longer has a prerequisite for white. It can be black too. And I guess that's an example of how an experiment based on observation can be conducted. And that was formalized by another philosopher, Alexander von Humboldt, who realized that we not only have to study the colors of swans, but also the context. And more importantly, we have to take into account the accuracy of our observations. All experiments have observations in them. But not all experiments rely solely on observing raw nature. The best experiments are the ones we can control everything except the very one thing we want to test. For example, let's just say that I have a cat, like the one that's sitting next to me right now, and he's being very graciously quiet and he doesn't meow right now. And this cat is a happy cat. And he will not move, he'll be sleeping. I have this hypothesis that if I provide him with food, he'll get up and run. Now, how will I design this experiment? I will have time that changes. So from the beginning of the experiment till the end of the experiment. So time will progress. That's one variable that I cannot control. It will be there. There's a second variable, temperature. If by any reason, by chance or by my own actions, I increase the temperature or I decrease the temperature so that Silk, the cat, gets really upset and starts running away, that could actually mean that it has nothing to do with my hypothesis, which is food makes him run away. So I have to make sure temperature is really controlled. Even more important, noise. I have to make sure that the cat doesn't get scared away. If I present him food and there's a noise that scares him and the cat moves, I will not know if it's with the food or the noise. So I have to control for the noise. That means, in this case, I have to remove noise and must make sure that the cat is not scared. You can actually sit down and think of all these variables, as we call them, that could be controlled or could be eliminated. And that is what in science we call experimental design or study design. And this is a very important part of science and experimentation. Now, two things. One, we must think really hard of making sure we can control of as many variables we do not want to test as possible. Second, we have to communicate that we've done so. And that's really important in research papers or in conferences or in debating. Most problems in communication of science can actually be defined because someone just didn't explain what they've done properly. They just either forgot or they just didn't think it was important enough. And you have two people saying, look, I gave him some food and he started running towards it. And then the other scientist will say, no, but I gave my cat food and he ran away from it. What the second scientist forgot to say was that there was also a loud bang when he opened the bag containing the food. So controlling all our variables is a very important part of science, but sometimes we cannot do that. For example, if you try to test climate change, if we try to test for global warming, we cannot just change the entire atmosphere. But what we can do is create a controlled experiment that tests a hypothesis. And that's what the Hawkesbury Institute for the Environment is quite dedicated in. We actually have something called the Hawkesbury Forest Experiment, where we have an entire forest where we have elevated the CO2 at different concentrations and we measure its effects. Join me next time with more episodes where I'll be interviewing prominent experts in their fields and asking them about a word or a phrase that they feel strongly about and they would like to define in their own way. Thank you and have a great week.